Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for you today. My guest will be Raquel Jaquez-Sharp, and she is the Communication and Partner Manager over at the Sylvia Center, which is a wonderful nonprofit organization in New York City. And we will tell you more about that in just a little bit. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in the news, some events you may want to participate in, and of course, my weekly recipe. So first, I wanted to share with you that I participated this past weekend in the rally for Families Belong Together. And it was really, really uplifting. It was so nice to be standing amongst hundreds of thousands of other people around the country. I mean, hundreds of thousands took to the streets. I don't know how many rallies there were, but there were in the hundreds of rallies. I know just here on Long Island, there had to be at least 10 different locations of people gathering. And New York, I think they said, was smaller than Chicago or L.A. I think we had something like 30 or 40,000 people in New York, but there were 70,000 people in Chicago. I don't know how many thousands of people in Washington, D.C., but it was a big rally. And even though Trump supposedly changed his ruling now and he's no longer separating families, we still need to work on reuniting the families that were separated. And we just need to, you know, talk about and, you know, protest the horrendous acts of our administration. I mean, this week was particularly depressing with the Supreme Court announcement of Justice Kennedy leaving, and knowing that Trump is going to have an opportunity to fill that spot. It's scary. And the Supreme Court this week, you know, did that ban on their support for unions so that government people no longer have to participate in paying any union dues. It's really optional, and unions need the support. They also banned, you know, the immigration ban, and it's just bad. And with the tariffs now and the taxes and the tariff wars, I mean, it's just horrendous what's going on, and it's just so critical that we all take to the streets and we all let our voices be heard. I just can't emphasize it enough. We can't put our heads in the sand, because what could happen is really scary. We, you know, look into history, you can see it's happened before. So find what your passion is, whether it's our freedom, First Amendment rights, the ability to speak up, equity rights, racism, gun control, climate change, pesticides, herbicides, hormones, GMOs in your food, LGBT rights, immigration, whatever your biggest passion is. Find an organization that is working on these issues and get involved. It's crucial that we all participate in this action, because if we don't, what will happen, we will all be responsible for. It's, you know, it's just really, really scary. And so I beg of all of you to get involved and, you know, speak up. You know, join your local food policy council. That's another thing you can do. You know, for me, food is just the connector that connects so many things. I know, of course, it doesn't deal with immigration and so many of these other horrible things that we're dealing with. But food is a player that everyone participates in, and we all can make wise food choices that will support sustainability, will support the earth, the planet, the oceans, the air, the water, the land, everything. And what we put in our mouths, you have to realize everything is connected. And so if you are buying a regular hamburger, and that hamburger has over 1,000 cows in it, and that hamburger was, you know, raised with feeding the cows GMO food, you know, all the water that goes into growing that food, the water for the cow, the, you know, the methane gas that those thousands of cows release into the atmosphere, all of it is connected. And it's just too easy to be unconscious about it and to just keep putting the food in your mouth and not thinking about where it came from and who grew it and was there slave labor involved in growing that tomato or that chocolate, you know, or the fish. I mean, you know, there's all this awareness that is coming into the news about the fish trade. The slave labor, you know, once these people get onto the ship, there's no control at all. And what's going on in the oceans is really, really horrendous. I actually blogged on that this week. Paul Greenberg, who wrote American Catch and Four Fish, just came out with a new book called The Omega Principle, Seafood and the Quest for a Long Life and Healthier Planet. And he's talking about, you know, the horrendous fishing industry and what's going on with that and traceability in where your fish came from. So everything is connected. And then we have the plastics in the water and the plastic pollution and how all the fish have plastic in it. And they're microscopic, so you can't see it. So when you're eating it, you don't even know that you're also eating plastic, but you are. And we all need to do what we can to reduce our use of plastics and, you know, get filtered water. Get filters on your water so that you don't have to buy bottled water. Get a stainless steel water bottle and keep filling it up. And don't buy plastic water bottles if you can avoid it. I mean, believe me, I bought one when I was on the streets in Manhattan during the rally protest. I hated doing it, but I didn't have my water bottle with me because I didn't want to carry anything. So sometimes you're going to do it. But for the most part, my stainless steel water bottle goes with me everywhere. And so it's just important that we all do what we can. And we're not going to be perfect, and no one's going to be perfect. But we all can do better than we're doing, and it's just crucial. So I'm going to leave it there, and I want to share with you some really great events coming up in and around the New York area. This weekend, July 9th, there is a zero waste workshop taking place at Ag Tech in Brooklyn, and it's being sponsored by Oco Farms, which is a wonderful urban farm in Brooklyn. They are doing aquaculture there and hydroponics and a wonderful community farm. So they will be leading the zero waste workshop. So that's on July 9th. Then there is also on July 10th, Planned Parenthood is having a second annual volunteer mobilization summit at Hofstra University. And actually, I didn't touch on this when I was just telling you about the protest. The hundreds of organizations that put together the protest to keep families together, the most crucial thing that they talked about is voting. We're coming up with the midterm elections, and we need everybody to vote. And so this volunteer summit that's coming up at Hofstra is really to get people out to vote. And, of course, Planned Parenthood is focusing on women's bodies and women's rights to control what they want to do with their bodies. And with the new appointee coming up for the Supreme Court justice, it's scary what could happen. So this is to get people out to vote. And whether they're coming out to vote for freedom with our bodies or whether coming out to vote to ban immigration or whatever, we need liberals, we need Democrats to register and vote. So if you can make it, there's two sessions at Hofstra on Tuesday, July 10th. One's in the morning from 9:30 to 11:30. The other one is from 6 to 8 p.m. So check that out. Then on July 11th and July 12th, there's two opportunities to see a wonderful documentary called Pesticides in Paradise. On July 11th, it's in the evening, and Anna Lappe from the Small Planet Institute, she will be speaking following the film. It's from 6 to 8 p.m. And then on July 12th, it will be from 11 to 1 p.m. in the afternoon. So both of those are listed on my website along with all of these things. Also on July 12th, Anna Lappe will be up at Stone Barns Center. Stone Barns is having a summer evening nights that they are celebrating, and there's 3 weeks in a row with women speakers, and the first one is Anna Lappe on July 12th. And it's a wonderful program from 7 to 8:30, but there is an open house, like pre-programming, starting at 5. You can walk around the farm. You can have a delicious meal at the Blue Hill Cafe and Grain Bar and buy wine by the glass. And it's only $20. So hope to see you there. I will be there on July 12th. And then, of course, again on the 19th and the 26th. There are also, I want to tell you about Slow Food Nations. If you have not made your reservations yet to get out to Denver, Colorado, Slow Food Nations is a big, big happening. It's like a huge happening throughout the city. And it is a wonderful time. Lots of food events going on, speakers and workshops and panel discussions. So it's great. If you're in the, if you live out in Colorado, great. If you don't and you want to, haven't made up all of your summer plans yet, definitely go there. Also on July 14th, there's a farm-to-table dinner that we'll be talking about in just a little bit with my guest. It's not at the Sylvia Center, but it's at Catchkey Farm, which is the farm that's affiliated with the Sylvia Center. And they're having their major fundraiser coming up this next Saturday, July 14th. So check that out. NOFA has many events coming up, but the big one that I want to tell you about is their summer conference from August 10th through 12th. The theme is Honoring Our Roots and Tending Our Future, and it's up in Massachusetts, in Amherst, Massachusetts, at Hampshire College. And one of the things so nice about the summer conference, in the winter, each of the NOFAs have their own conference, the winter conferences. And, you know, NOFA New York has one, Connecticut, Massachusetts. But the summer conference is huge because all the NOFAs, which stands for the Northeast Organic Farming Association, they all come together and create a huge conference that is just wonderful. So if you can make it to Amherst that weekend, that's where you want to be. You'll be meeting with lots of farmers, producers, consumers, and other food caring people. So check that out. I have so many different events on my website. I don't want to take the time to go through all of them right now, but you do want to check them out. There's, you know, food truck rodeos coming up, other farm and compost tours. Edible Manhattan has a bunch of things coming up. And so every week I really scan my emails and the internet to find all of the food-centered events that are coming up and put them on my website and put together a really comprehensive list of what's going on. So if you have any events coming up that you want to share with me and you'd like me to include them in my programming, please just send them to me. I'd be happy to do that. And that is really it for the event. So I want to share with you my recipe this week. I had fun this week making a carrot cake, wedding cake. But this recipe, you know, I basically, you know, doubled it or tripled it to work for me. But you certainly can divide it in half or in thirds for what you want. It was a small wedding, so it serves 35 to 40 people. You can make it in one sheet cake if you don't want to make three different layers, as I did. But I made three different layers. I had the bottom layer was 12.5-inch diameter. Then I had a 9.5-inch diameter and a 6.5-inch diameter. And I first prepared the pans. And if you prepare the pans well, it makes taking the cake out of the pan so much easier. So I not only sprayed the pan with oil, I then cut out a round circle of parchment paper to put on the bottom of the pan. And then I sprayed it again and dusted the whole pan with flour. And it just makes taking the cake out of the pan so easy. Basically, you just turn it over and it pops right out. So it's super easy. So prepare the pans well, and it's worth it. Preheat your oven to 350. These are the ingredients for the cake. 10 cups of shredded carrots, 2 cups of raisins, 2 cups of organic brown sugar, 4 cups of organic whole wheat pastry flour, 4 cups of organic white flour, 8 teaspoons of cinnamon, 3 teaspoons baking powder, 3 teaspoons baking soda, 2 teaspoons salt, 2 cups of chopped walnuts, 3 cups of organic sugar, 10 organic eggs, 2 tablespoons vanilla, 2 cups organic canola oil, and 2 cups of applesauce. And in a large bowl, I first did the shredded carrots. I mixed the shredded carrots with brown sugar and the raisins, and that set that aside so it's basically marinating in the brown sugar while I put everything else together. And so I took out another bowl and I combined the flour, the cinnamon, the baking soda, the baking powder, and the salt and mixed that together. Then I added the chopped walnuts into that. And the walnuts, you don't want to chop so that they're pulverized, but you do want to chop them so they're not too big. And then in the third bowl, I whisked together the eggs and the sugar, and you want to whisk that together really well until it starts getting frothy and light and yellow in color. Then I added the oil, the applesauce, and the vanilla and mixed that up really well. Then I added those wet ingredients to the dry ingredients and combined it. And then lastly, I added back in the carrots and the raisins and mixed that up well. And then I divided it evenly between the three pans. And obviously the smaller pans are going to cook quicker than the bigger pan. So the smaller pans cooked for about 50 minutes and the larger pan took about 65 minutes. But you want to keep checking because every oven is different. Sometimes you might want to move the pans from the back of the oven to the front of the oven just so that it is all cooking evenly. And you know it's ready when the cake starts pulling away from the sides and you stick a knife or a toothpick into the center and it comes out clean. None of the batter sticks to the knife. And that's how you know it's ready. And then you can remove it from the oven. Like I said, the smaller layers were ready 15 minutes before the larger layer. I took it out, I let it cool for a little bit on a cooling rack, about 10 minutes, and then I inverted the pan and let the cake just pop right out of the pan. Let that cool completely before you frost it. So I let it cool for a while, and then I actually frosted it the next day, made the frosting the next day, but you can do whichever you'd like. If you do that, just once they're cooled, completely cooled, wrap them really well in some saran wrap and put them in a refrigerator and then take them out the next day to frost them. And or you can frost them, you know, same day, just once they're cooled. So for the cream cheese frosting, I use 4 pounds of cream cheese, 3/4 cup half and half, 1 cup of honey, 2 to 3 cups of confectioner's sugar, and that depends on the sweetness you like, and 4 tablespoons of pure vanilla extract. And I just mix that up in a stand-up mixer. And again, depending on your cream cheese, I use 3/4 cup half and half, and basically it's to thin the cream cheese frosting out enough so that I can spread it. So you can start with a half a cup if you want, and if that feels like the right consistency to you, fine. I added another 1/4 cup and had 3/4 cup total. And mix that up, and then I frosted the cake. But first, you want to divide each of the layers in half horizontally so that each layer is 2 layers. So the way that I do that is I just use a knife and I cut horizontally across the layers. And then I have round pieces of cardboard, and I realize not everybody has round pieces of cardboard, but you can either make one, you know, you can cover it with some saran wrap so that it's clean. And you then just take the piece of cardboard and slice it between the two layers that you just cut so you can lift the top layer off, frost the cream cheese in the middle, and then put the layer right back on. And do that with all 3 layers. And then you can either stack them together and frost the whole cake, or because I do make wedding cakes, I actually have, you know, columns and things like that, some, you know, structure so that I can make the cake have some height. But you can find the recipe on my website, and you can see some pictures of it, the finished result. But I hadn't made a wedding cake since my daughter, so I guess that's 7 years now. So it was really fun to do it. And so I enjoyed that. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest this week. Raquel Jaquez-Sharp is the Communication and Partners Manager at the Sylvia Center, which is a New York-based nonprofit that's focusing on nutrition education and youth development. And Raquel was born in rural California, where she had the opportunity to grow up and, you know, be surrounded by different layers of the food system, including agribusiness, farm workers' rights, and the challenges around food education in public schools, particularly in lower-income rural communities. And because of this upbringing, she's so passionate about the intersections of food, education, health, and the environment, and has been working for many years just in this one focused area in food education. She started as a chef teacher at the Edible Schoolyard in Berkeley, which was the first Edible Schoolyard project created by Alice Waters and the Shea Panay Foundation. And she worked with, for the past 8 years, on with various organizations creating educational programs that further provide opportunities for children, youth, and adults to have better health outcomes. And I'm going to let Raquel, tell us more about what she's doing right now with the Sylvia Center. Raquel, are you with me?
Hi, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So I love the Sylvia Center, and I'd love you to tell my listeners some more about what the Sylvia Center does.
Sure. So as you mentioned, at the Sylvia Center, we're working with young people to develop their cooking skills and personal growth, while providing them opportunities for them to take their skills into the community. So working with younger kids in community centers in New York City and upstate in Columbia County, we work with young people and teach them how to do fresh tastings and other things at farmers markets. So we have a broad reach because we work both in New York City and in Columbia County.
Mm-hmm. And do you actually bring kids from the city up to Columbia County?
We do not, actually, because both areas are particularly difficult to get to, and because the need is so high right where we're working, we actually just work directly with students and their families in those areas. So at Catchkey Farm, we host kids in the surrounding area from different schools, and they come to the farm to learn about everything from where their food comes from, how it's grown, and how seeds are planted in greenhouses. You know, how do we plant rows of crops? How do we thin the rows? How do we harvest? And then what do you do with that food once you, you know, have beautiful, delicious vegetables? How do you cook with it? So part of learning about where your food comes from is also learning about what is good for your body and the planet, which we, you know, emphasize with our kids to, so that when they leave, they have a better sense of, you know, my food choices aren't just affecting me, but it affects everything that surrounds us.
Mm-hmm. So then what about the kids? I guess I was under the impression that you actually brought kids from New York City up to the country, to Sylvia, to Catchkey Farm. So do you have opportunities for the kids in the city to work in farms?
We have partners in New York City that we work with that actually run urban farms and urban gardens. So we do have that experience with them of harvesting, growing and harvesting, and then cooking with those ingredients. But we also provide them with resources such as what are local CSAs doing and how can you get involved with, you know, that kind of get linked up with that system that's already in progress, because we don't have a farm ourselves down here. And also we work within a network of community-based organizations in the city that are working with huge, large numbers of kids in the summertime at their public housing community centers. And so after we've trained about 30 teens for 8 weeks, they then are hired by the community-based organizations to teach younger kids similar lessons that they have been taught. So after they've learned the fundamental, you know, knife skills and recipes that they then they can pass that on to younger kids and take ownership of what they've learned.
Oh, that's wonderful. So they actually become the teachers.
Yes, exactly. So the mastery of technique is then passed on and they become the teachers. And they take that role very seriously. And so it's really cool to see young people, particularly teenagers, who could be doing a lot of other things with their time, especially in the summer, taking on that role as the mentor, the teacher, you know, And the younger kids really respect them and see that they are making healthy choices for their bodies, and, you know, that cooking can be fun and exciting. And so it's really been an effective model for us to be able to hire young people in the communities to be the teachers.
Mm-hmm. And you actually pay them too, you say, right?
We do, yes. And so that's a big incentive for them to, you know, really take on that role. And we are able to pay them through different partnerships, which is incredible. And it makes it very worthwhile for these teenagers who can then, you know, add it to their resume and have some experience around what it means to be a food educator, what it means to be a chef teacher. And then, you know, a lot of them decide, hey, this is really interesting. This might be something for me. I thought maybe I was going to go into fashion, but actually, you know, this food education piece is really cool. And so a lot of them will then apply to a culinary program or go to culinary school. So that's been really interesting to see.
Wow. Wow. That sounds great. So can you tell us a little bit more about Catskey Farm?
Yes, definitely. So Catskey Farm is in Kinderhook, and it is the farm that is directly associated with Great Performances, and it is also home to the Sylvia Center. So that is actually where we started the Sylvia Center, and it has been the place where we have always brought children into the Learning Garden there. So we have a full-time garden manager and garden assistants who work directly with the kids in the garden, and then we also have chef teachers up there who then take on the cooking piece.
How large a farm is it?
You know, I'm not sure actually how many acres it is, but I know that we grow on at least 5 of it. And Catskey Farm has its own CSA as well that distributes in New York City. So if that's something that your listeners are interested in, they can learn more at catskeyfarm.com. And it is where we will host our fundraiser in just a couple of weeks now. I think you mentioned that before. But so many of our partners and supporters in Columbia County come out on that evening, and we have a beautiful farm dinner that supports our programs upstate.
Mm-hmm. How far out of New York City is Kinderhook?
It's about 2.5 hours. So really a lot of our supporters who are coming from New York City like to make a weekend of it. As you know, there's plenty of delicious food and things to do up there, particularly in Hudson. And so it's a really nice weekend. All of us who work down in the city are really looking forward to getting up there for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So you mostly are based in New York City with the work that you do, correct?
Yes, uh-huh. I am. Yes. But we often go back and forth because we are really one staff. And so, especially with, you know, leading up to the farm dinner, I had been going upstate to visit with different partners. And, you know, and it's also really important, I think, we're a small organization, so all of us like to be really close to the work. So, you know, when we see students who have been to multiple programs, we like to know them by name. We like to know their parents. We like to know, you know, what's really happening in their lives. And I think that's something that makes our organization unique, that we have a wide reach, but we still have a very personal touch. And I mm-hmm. think that is something that is very critical when you're working with people and food and talking about, you know, what kinds of things are you challenged by, whether it's food access or, you know, seeing people in your community who are struggling with preventable diseases. You know, you really want to have a personal touch and show that you care beyond just, you know, a 1.5 hour cooking class.
Right. You know, that is a great lead into my next question, because, you know, it's so important, as we're talking about, to teach young people about healthy eating. and, you know, and the connections that that makes. But so often they're not the ones that are responsible for the food that's in their house.
Right.
And so my question was, you know, how much work do you actually do with the parents so that the parents know what the kids are learning and the parents can support that work? I mean, you kind of need, I would think you need the buy-in from the parents. Otherwise, the kids are coming home and the parents are going to get angry that the kids are telling them not to buy the food that they're buying for them. And, you know, you create some problems, I would think.
Yes. These kinds of experiences that the students have, whether it's on the farm or in a community kitchen, they do have a lasting impact for the kids. And we often see that it also has a ripple effect when they go home and they talk with their families. And usually what happens is the next time that kid comes to cooking class, the parent will come in, like the first 5 minutes, right? So they're not just dropping off. Now they want to know. So they'll come in and say, I heard that you made, you know, zucchini muffins in your last cooking class. Can I have that recipe? Or they'll say, you know, I noticed now all of a sudden my child knows how to slice carrots. You know, where did they learn this? I didn't even know they could hold a knife, right? And so we do see that it has an effect on the families. But we don't just want that to be something tangential. We also make an intentional effort to work with families in Hudson. So we host family cooking classes where the community is invited. You don't have to be a previous attender of our classes at Catchkey or anything like that. It's open to the community, and we invite kids and their families to come and just cook with us and learn something, gather around the table, and be a part of our larger community. So, you know, not only is it important to teach the kids, but you're right, they aren't making the choices when it comes down to it at the grocery store, and so we recognize that and make an intentional effort to work with their families as well.
Mm-hmm. And those are the families up by Catchkey Farms. What about the families down in the city at the Sylvia Center? Do they get to benefit from that as well?
So in New York City, we do invite the parents to the final lesson or the final project that the teens are working on, and so that they can see what the teens have been doing. At this time, we aren't offering family cooking classes because we've started to restructure that idea a little bit, and we think it would be more beneficial to have open community classes because in the city there's a little bit of a different dynamic with, you know, what is a family, who is supporting the students. Sometimes it's not just mom and dad. Sometimes it's grandma, grandpa, cousins, older cousins, younger cousins. And so we are ramping up it's a good problem to have, but we need more staff. And so we're ramping up our capacity to be able to do that. And so we will be doing that this fall for our students in New York City.
Ah, great. That's exciting.
Yes, it is really exciting. We're growing really quickly, and we are fueled by it, really, because this work is so critical, especially in the communities where we work. You know, in the Hudson Valley, we often think of that place as, you know, having such a bounty of good food and an abundance. But really, when you look at it, in the county, Hudson has the highest rate of eligibility for free and reduced price school meals. And Germantown in particular, where we work in the schools, has the third highest rate of obesity in the county. So there's this really interesting dynamic where there is plenty of, you know, farm fresh food being grown all around. And yet there are so many people who are still challenged by these issues of preventable diseases and food access.
Right, right. Yes, you're right. People don't think about that. You think you're living in the country that's what they're eating, but so much of that food that's being grown in Hudson Valley is then being shipped down to the Union Square Market or, you know,
exactly.
To the CSAs
down
and stuff.
To New York.
Right, right. Let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the impact of your work and how it's actually rippling out into the communities. So everyone who's listening, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green, and I'm talking with Raquel from the Sylvia Center. Be right back.
This is Heidi Boghossian, co-host of Law & Disorder Radio. Tune in Wednesdays at 5 p.m. to hear timely analysis on issues concerning civil liberties, privacy, the right to dissent, and even practices of torture by the U.S. government and private corporations. Our guests are leading authorities in their fields from around the country and sometimes internationally. They include authors, lawyers, activists, scholars, and many more. That's Wednesday at 5 p.m. right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
Do you want to know the latest news or upcoming events? Follow us at Twitter at @PRN_radio or click the Twitter icon on our homepage. You can also friend us on Facebook. Just search Progressive Radio Network. Always new and up to date. The Progressive Radio Network, your home for thoughtful and informative information.
Known as a gadget guy, but I love gadgets that really do the trick, like the new app. The Progressive Radio Network has an app, thanks to our friends at Audio Now. Hey, this is Mark Farrell, host of Insight on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we broadcast live out of New York City. But if you can't catch the show live, no frets. It's always archived. It's always on the app. Download it now, listen later, whenever you want. The Progressive Radio Network app is available from our friends at Audio Now. Check it out.
You're tuned to PRN. We'll keep bringing you the best in alternative voices for social and political news, the environment, health, the economy, and a whole lot more. All you have to do is keep listening. PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with my guest, Raquel Jaquez Sharp from the Sylvia Center. She's in charge of the communications and is very involved in the work that the Sylvia Center is doing, educating our young people about food and nutrition, and we were just talking about the impact that their work has on the community. So, Raquel, can you share with us you know, the ripple effects that you are seeing on the work that you're doing with the people both up in Columbia County and down in the city with the Sylvia Center?
Yeah, so it really works the same regardless of, you know, where we are in the community, whether we're in Brooklyn or Germantown or Staten Island. What we're seeing is that when kids are working directly with fresh ingredients, they are more likely to eat those when it's on their plate. They are more open to trying new things and working together to cook something delicious. This is especially important and critical for young people who are on the verge of being able to make those decisions for themselves and being able to have the choice of whether or not they are going to make something at home that is healthy for them and is, you know, doesn't contain all of those additives and preservatives, or if they're going to buy something on the corner store. And this kind of education is critical at this point in time, especially because we need young people to be empowered to be advocates for healthier communities. Because as you said earlier, you know, there are so many issues that need our urgent attention, whether it's, you know, the farm bill, whether it's immigrants, whether it's about, you know, climate change. We as adults, we as leaders are responsible for the ways in which we educate young people and kids about the world in which they live and how the decisions that they make affect everything that surrounds them. So it is about food, and it is about, you know, what kinds of choices can you make that are good for your body? And it's also about what kind of advocate can you be for a healthier community?
Right, right. That's great, because that also makes them feel like they have power. You know, right? So often kids feel like they're powerless. And so if you give that back to them, that in itself can have a huge ripple effect, I would think.
Yes, and giving it back to them with the resources and tools to make good decisions, right? And so the resources being, you know, what kind of people in your community are doing food justice work, or what kind of people in your community are running the farmers market, and tools being, okay, let's really get down to the nitty-gritty of the tangible skills of cooking in the kitchen, right? So many of us grow up watching people cook, and we ourselves aren't learning those skills or adopting those skills. So it's really important that we're doing it on both sides and being able to watch our young people take those skills and run with it in ways that they imagine their communities to be healthier. I think that's really also a critical piece, that we're not directly, you know, giving them the prescription, right, of this is what you should advocate for, but we're providing the tools and resources and allowing them to be inspired about what the next step is for them in their lives.
Mm-hmm. And does that also then include kind of teaching them about some of the negative health outcomes that come from eating so many of the traditional fast foods and processed foods that are so rampant so often in underserved communities?
Yes, it does. It does come with, that's what I mean by the tangible skills, right? Of, okay, if you can read a nutrition facts label, or if you know how to identify the ingredient list, and, you know, what does it mean that it's in this order, right? The ingredient list tells you exactly how much of something is in there by just in the order that it's listed. But if the kids don't know that, then they are just picking things up based on the food marketing, based on the front of the box. And it's really important that in being empowered, you have those tangible skills to be able to say, okay, this bag of chips has way too much salt, way too much sugar. This is not going to be good for my body, and I'm not going to feel good after I eat it. Mm-hmm. So what is an alternative? What is something that, you know, I can make? Which is why we teach recipes that are practical, which is why, you know, we teach how do you make an after-school snack for yourself? How, if you wanted to make hummus when you got home, how would you do that? And, you know, how would you slice up some carrots and maybe, you know, what do you have in your fridge? If you have a cucumber, great, slice it up. So these kinds of skills that aren't just about, you know, seeing and eating delicious food, but it's the practicality of it, of knowing and how and when to choose something that's healthier for you.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So in your work, what have you found to be some of the most surprising outcomes that you've seen? And then also, what have been some of your greatest challenges?
Sure. I think in our work, some of the greatest outcomes that we see are that kids are really more likely to choose healthy foods when they are given the option. And with that comes probably our greatest challenge, is in that it takes multiple tries for a kid to realize that maybe they actually like it, right? And so the first time, they might be a little bit hesitant and a little skeptical. And then the second time, maybe they take a bite. And then the third time, maybe they see that like half of their class is really loving it, and so they'll try it also. And so it's not just a one-and-done sort of approach, right? We understand that we have to keep at it. And really, you know, we as an organization, because we're small, we want to grow, and we believe that every child deserves this kind of education. Whether you grew up in Germantown or whether you grew up in Brooklyn or the Bronx or Manhattan, you deserve to know what good food is, and you deserve to know how to cook and feed yourself. And so I think that's also one of our greatest challenges, is that every year we want to serve more and more kids, and every year we are growing, but we are limited by the funds that we have. We're limited by the staff. And so we really look to the communities that we serve. We look to major philanthropists, foundations, and government funding to really fuel this work and serve New York State in the way that, kids deserve.
Wow, that's great. What are some of the kids' favorite recipes? What do you find that you're making most? And how many kids do you actually service now? Like, how large are you?
Yeah, so our organization was started in 2007, and since then we've served 23,000 students between New York City and Columbia County. And now, the last couple of years, we've averaged about 3,000 a year, and that's combined in New York City and Columbia County. So we would love to serve more. We would love to have multiple, buses of kids coming to the farm, and we would love to have more cohorts of teenagers and young kids learning in New York City. As I mentioned earlier, we are challenged by funding as well as staffing, and we want to grow, which is why we need the community's support. And I'm sorry, what was the other question you asked?
I wanted to know what some of their favorite recipes were.
Yeah, so, it varies, but lately the students have been really into cooking avocado bites, which are these small sort of, kind of quiche-style things that the kids like to say are like a quick snack. They also like making homemade hummus. They also really like anything that is a bunch of vegetables cooked together, like a vegetable stir fry or a vegetable pad thai. I think for them, the more ingredients, the better, because it means there's more jobs, more things for people to do. And they get excited by that because it's them getting to work with tools and knives and all of that. So it's been really quite a journey to see how much, their palates can really develop. Right. So from the first time they come to class, they are just learning some of these, what some of the ingredients are. And by the end, they might be mixing fish sauce with soy sauce with, rice vinegar to make a dipping sauce for their dumplings. Right. And so they are so receptive. And I think that is one of the most amazing things to watch, is that we often think that teenagers or young kids aren't critical thinkers, like they aren't thinking about what something is or how they can mix and match or what they can get creative with. And we've actually found that the opposite is true, that when they're given the tools and the resources, they can really, really dig in and create something that's really delicious and take ownership of it. And then again, with our teenagers, we see that they are so excited by it that they actually want a summer job to teach this to younger kids. And that has been so rewarding and amazing to see that process all the way through.
Wow. So you said you mentioned that you partner with other organizations for this type of work. Can you share with us some of the organizations that you have partnerships with?
Yeah. So in New York City, we partner with some of the community-based organizations that run community centers, such as Grand Street Settlement and CAMBA. We also partner with Green City Force, which is an amazing organization, also working with young people, and we come in and teach a culinary program to them because they primarily work in urban gardens and urban farms.
So what were they called? Community what?
Green City Force.
Green City Force.
Yes. And then upstate, we partner with Perfect 10 Hudson. We have a great partnership with the Germantown School District, which has been such a period of just amazing work and capacity building with the teachers in Germantown, as well as the superintendent. They've been so supportive of the work and really eager to bring this kind of work into their schools. And then we also have, you know, community engagement from restaurants and chefs, which is an interesting and great part of our organization, where chefs come in and actually guest teach some classes. So Pierre of Pierre's of Bridgehampton has done that. We've also had other chefs in Brooklyn do similar work. And then upstate, we have a whole host of people who also contribute their time. So sometimes they are not interested in directly teaching a cooking class, but they can host for us. And Valley Variety has done that for us. I think I mentioned we work with Perfect 10, as well as Etsy upstate. We've just had an amazing show of support from people who are interested in this work and want to help in whichever way that they can, whether it's chef engagement or offering a space or offering funding. You know, really, it's such that food, people have many different entry points to food, and so we find that when you combine food and kids, people get excited about it and they right. want to support us.
Right. Well, we are almost out of time, so before we run out of time, I'd like you to just take a moment to share with us your upcoming fundraiser, because I think many of my listeners might enjoy a weekend up in the Hudson Valley. So can you tell us about your farm-to-table dinner coming up next weekend?
Yes. So on July 14th, which is just a couple of Saturdays coming up here, we will have our annual farm dinner at Catchkey Farm, and this includes cocktails and a lovely farm dinner. And the support, your support at this dinner makes it possible for over 2,000 young people to experience the farm. And as I mentioned before, this work is so critical to the children in Columbia County, as well as the food system as a whole, as we start to, you know, empower young people to be healthy food advocates. So it's a wonderful dinner. We have amazing sponsors from really great restaurants and businesses in the Hudson Valley, and we would love for anyone and everyone to come and attend. Tickets start at $250, which sponsors three students from Columbia County to attend a full-day program at the farm. So your money is going towards something really great for kids, and people can find more information on fttdinner.com or on our website. You can find information at sylviacenter.org.
Wonderful, and I have it posted on my website as well. So anyone, if you didn't have a pen and didn't write that down, just check out IE Green, and it will be listed there as well. Well, Raquel, thank you so much for joining us. It's been wonderful, and I wish you so much luck, and I hope to come visit. I would love to see
thank
what you're
you
doing
so
up there.
Thank you so much, Bhavani.
You're welcome. And everyone listening, thank you for joining us. Have a great rest of the weekend. If you're celebrating, extending your 4th of July celebrations, please enjoy them, and be well, eat well, and stay involved. Bye for now. See you all next week.